The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
And whereas tickets will be sold on the painting, with all proceeds going toward the Westville Cenotaph Restoration Project, and whereas since Dan is the son of a First World War veteran, this cause is near and dear to his heart, as is the town of Westville. Therefore, be it resolved that all members of this House of Assembly thank Dan Monroe for his generous contribution to the restoration of the Westville Cenotaph. Mr. Speaker, I request waiver of notice and passage without debate.
There has been a request for waiver. Is it agreed? It is agreed. Would all those in favour of the motion please say aye.
Aye.
Contrary-minded, nay. Motion is carried. Barring no more notices of motion, we'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now 2:36. We'll conclude at 3:36. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, in late August, Dr. Wheeler's expert panel on hydraulic fracturing handed in their final report. It was the most extensive review. It was expensive, too, but it was also the most extensive review of shale gas development in our province's history. And as we now know, the government banned any hope of development after just 3 days of consideration. Several members of the Wheeler panel have already spoken out against this decision, Mr. Speaker, including Mr. Ray Ritzy, Mr. Graham Gagnon, and Mr. Brad Hayes. But the government insists it is following the Wheeler recommendations. And so my question to the Premier is, who is right? The Premier or the members of the Wheeler panel themselves?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If the Honourable Member would actually read the report, what the report said was that there is more work to be done. There is more investment in understanding whether or not we actually have shale gas here in the province. I want to let him know that the Department of Energy is well on its way to continuing to map this province to ensure if we have that resource. And at the same time, we're out engaging communities. And what we have said, that if we go down the road of hydraulic fracking in this province, we believe there should be a conversation with Nova Scotians.
Yeah. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I find it interesting the Premier is so interested in my reading materials. I can again assure him I have read the report, and in fact, you only need to read as far as page 5 to know that the Premier is incorrect. Perhaps the Premier doesn't read beyond page 5, but I do, Mr. Speaker, and on page 5, and I quote, it says, "We are not proposing a moratorium or any other political device in order to stop development, Mr. Speaker." I'll table that. Page 5 of the report for those that don't go beyond page 4, Mr. Speaker. This is the words of Dr. Wheeler. He is an expert in his field. He's been widely published in areas of water quality and health and groundwater pollution control, and now has become a nationwide expert on hydraulic fracturing. It would be awfully helpful, Mr. Speaker, if we could all, as Nova Scotians, hear from Dr. Wheeler himself. But it turns out there's a clause in his contract with the government, which I will table, that says, and I quote, that the contractor shall keep private and confidential and not make public or divulge any information or material relative to the services he has rendered without first obtaining the written consent of the province. And I have that here, Mr. Speaker. I'll just table it in a moment. Here it is. So Dr. Wheeler is prevented from actually speaking out, unlike the members of his panel who have all said that the government is not following their direction. So I will ask the Premier, why is there a gag order on Dr. Wheeler, who is such an expert, who could actually tell us whether the government is following his report or not?
Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank Dr. Wheeler and the entire committee for the tremendous work they have done on behalf of the people of this province. I want to thank the Minister of Energy for doing a tremendous job, Mr. Speaker, ensuring that there's an imbalance. Mr. Speaker, I'm pleased to know that the leader of the Conservative Party has read the report. Now maybe you should get someone to read who can understand and tell them what's actually in it.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Well, I see we've elevated the debate to a pretty high level in the chamber today, Mr. Speaker, as we discuss one of the most important new ways to create jobs in this province. We're now going to question whether people are reading reports or not. Well, that's pretty sad, Mr. Speaker. My whole point is we also appreciate the work that Dr. Wheeler has done and would like him to be free to speak his mind on whether the Premier is right or whether Dr. Wheeler and his panel are right that they are not following the report. So if the Premier is so open to the advice of Dr. Wheeler, will he tell the House today whether the government has or will put in writing the freedom for Dr. Wheeler to tell Nova Scotians what he thinks?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'll ask the Minister of Energy to respond.
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A couple of things. First of all, Mr. Wheeler, that provision ended when he submitted the report. Mr. Wheeler knows that. We told him that in the time. It did. Dr. Wheeler has confirmed that he understands that, and he's confirmed with us. Mr. Speaker, I would also...
Order, please. The Honourable Minister of Energy has the floor.
Mr. Speaker, I will quote from the report, a significant period of learning and dialogue is now required at the provincial and community level, and hydraulic fracturing from the purpose of unconventional gas and oil development should not proceed at this time in Nova Scotia, signed by all panelists. Mr. Speaker, and the Leader of the Opposition likes to selectively quote panelists. I will read one of the other panelists who said, quote, when you have a situation where the expert panel is telling you community support should be in place and there is a lack of widespread community support, I'm not surprised the minister would introduce a moratorium. In some ways, that's exactly what we suggested should happen. And I think, the minister has made a decisive and bold decision respecting the democratic process, and that is something that's laudable. Mr. Speaker, and I will table that as well.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question for you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, we all know young people in Nova Scotia face many challenges. The Community Foundation of Nova Scotia have released a report today entitled Vital Signs, and it paints a disturbing picture of Nova Scotia youth who have the highest rate of unemployment, suicidal thoughts, and anxiety disorders in the country. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier through you is this. Why has a year gone by without any action on these issues from this government?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I couldn't disagree more with the comments by the leader of the New Democratic Party. This government, in our first budget, invested $21 million to ensure that we enhance School Plus so that we ensure that we had professional help where young Nova Scotians are to deal with the many challenges that are facing young people across this province. Mr. Speaker, there is absolutely no question. There is an alarming rate to which young people are feeling there are no options. That has been ongoing in this province for quite some time. I am pleased to say, while we don't have all the answers when it comes to this particular issue, we are not ignoring it. We are investing financially in that, Mr. Speaker, as well as ensuring that we have the professional support to help young people across this province.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I thank the Premier for his response. The School Plus program is an excellent program, one that was started by the previous administration the official opposition, built on by the past administration, and it's good to see that the current government continues to build on that program. Mr. Speaker, the Conference Board of Canada also recently issued a report just last month. They provided some startling statistics on unemployment rates, debt levels, and the significant gap in income between the young workplace adults and the baby boomers. My question for you, Mr. Speaker, to the Premier is this. What is his government doing to address the challenges that young, unemployed Nova Scotians face in a situation where there's growing inequality in incomes in this province?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Mr. Speaker, in our first year in office, we have increased the number of apprenticeship opportunities for young Nova Scotians right here at home. Speaker, we have announced research grants, which provides university students with their first opportunity of employment right here in this province, when before they used to have to go to Central Canada for that opportunity. Mr. Speaker, we have eliminated the two-year experience requirement for entry into the public service. Mr. Speaker, these are all positive signs for young Nova Scotians that there's a future right here.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Well, I look forward to seeing the stats on the entry into the public service, Mr. Speaker. With a hiring freeze, I doubt that we're going to see too many young people showing up in our public service. Mr. Speaker, we don't need to look any further than the Ivany report to see Nova Scotia's shifting demographics and what that means for the province if we lose more young people. So my final question to the Premier, Mr. Speaker, is this. Instead of picking fights with healthcare workers, why isn't the Premier more intent on addressing the issues that young people face in our province?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I just provided the Leader of the New Democratic Party with a number of initiatives that have been taken by this government. I would also tell her that we'll be investing in graduate to opportunity program, which actually is a government working with private sector employers to provide first-time opportunities right here at home, Mr. Speaker. These are all positive signs, and I want to remind the leader of the party that, quite frankly, a government that takes its responsibility serious, ensures that it can provide quality services to all Nova Scotians that are sustainable, not only this year, but well into the future, Mr. Speaker, speaks to every Nova Scotian, Mr. Speaker, not just certain segments of the population.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the Premier, one day, Mr. Speaker, after his government was sworn in, the Premier said about Communications Nova Scotia, and I quote, "We will be moving back towards its original intent, which was allowing access to government and government services," and I will table that quote for the Premier's benefit. But, Mr. Speaker, the facts behind the scenes show otherwise. In just 10 months in office, the Liberals have spent $283,481.80 on taxpayer-funded polling through Communications Nova Scotia. And my question is, how is spending more than $250,000 on polling in just 10 months helping Nova Scotians access government services?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'll ask the Minister responsible to respond to that.
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the question. In fact, the spending by the government on polling is down, and as well, the spending on advertising is down $600,000. So there's actually been quite a few changes. Staffing is also down. There's been, and as the Honourable Leader would know, we have also introduced an act which requires an accountability report by Communications Nova Scotia at the end of every fiscal year. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, having not polled or advertised with our tax dollars as much as the NDP is hardly something to be proud of, when in fact they promised not to do it at all, Mr. Speaker. Among other things, Mr. Speaker, the $300,000 in research asked for the public's opinion on merging our health authorities, Mr. Speaker, even though that was already a Liberal election promise. Mr. Speaker, you shouldn't have to do a poll to know whether you should keep your election promises or not. So I'll ask the Premier, why did he waste taxpayers' money on a poll asking whether he should keep his election promises?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm very proud of the fact that we are keeping every commitment that we've made to Nova Scotians in the election campaign. Speaker, and I can't for the life of me understand why the leader of the Conservative Party is so afraid to ask Nova Scotians their opinion. Perhaps every once in a while he should spend less time talking in this place and more time listening to Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know if you ever experienced deja vu, but I'm having that kind of feeling right now because in the face of the same questions just a few short years ago, what this Premier just said in defense of spending money on government-paid polls is exactly what former Premier Dexter said in response to the same question. So, Mr. Speaker, maybe someday we'll get to a day when the Premier says the same things after the election as he was saying before the election. And I'll give you an example, Mr. Speaker. In this House, just a short time ago, one of the Premier's members, the member for Dartmouth East, the now Minister responsible for communications, said, Nova Scotia, said, and I quote, instead of putting $250,000 into health care, the NDP Premier has decided he should tell Nova Scotians how wonderful the NDP is. Well, Mr. Speaker, why didn't this Premier take his own minister's advice and put that $250,000 into frontline health care instead of polling to ask Nova Scotians whether he should keep his promises or not?
Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, not only did the minister responsible put an extra $250,000, Mr. Speaker, he did much better and put $600,000 in, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, the government is avoiding the real issues in health care. You know, rather than focusing on patient care, they've decided to rearrange the seats in the boardroom and at the negotiating table. Meanwhile, wait times for long-term care have increased by 30% under this government. Healthcare workers can't move patients out of ERs because hospital beds are occupied by patients waiting to be admitted into a long-term care facility, but there aren't any beds available. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Premier is, what is the Premier doing to prevent the growing wait times for long-term care that's happening under his watch?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll ask the Minister of Health to respond.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank you very much for the question. There may be a current district out of the nine where there has been perhaps a slight rise in the number. The total number now in the province requiring long-term care in nursing homes is down by 100.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we know that there are well over 1,000 people waiting for long-term care in the province. But, Mr. Speaker, I'll give you another example of dysfunction in the system, one that's in the Premier's backyard. Everywhere in our province, long-term care facilities are having to close for many different reasons. Mountainly Lodge is a long-term care facility in Annapolis County. And over the last few months, this health care facility has had serious staffing problems. And in fact, they've lost more than 20 staff because of working conditions. With many seniors waiting for long-term care beds, I want to ask the Premier, what steps has he taken to ensure that long-term care beds at Mountain Lee Lodge don't sit empty while there are wait lists, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the honourable member for the question. First of all, let me express my great admiration and appreciation for the men and women who work at Mount Lee Lodge, not only now, but in the past, Mr. Speaker, and well into the future. They provide care to our family members, many of whom, quite frankly, have the privilege of seeing on a regular basis, and some of whom who work there I'm related to. I can tell you what there's been real challenges. There's no question. As the member would know, that facility is managed by an independent board. What we have done, and we're allowing that process to take place, what we've done is asked the Department of Health to go in to work with both sides to ensure that the challenges that are being faced in that institution get resolved so that we continue to provide those citizens in our community who are aging with the possibility of having a bed placement right in their own home community.
Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on our final supplementary.
Thank you very much. And it is indeed the case that this facility is one that provides excellent care, but with the kind of staff shortage that's been experienced, family members are certainly very concerned about the level of care and have, in fact, spoken out publicly about their concerns. In January, Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Health struck a committee to report back on the long-term care strategy within 100 days, which would have been late April, and we're still waiting to hear back from this committee. So, Mr. Speaker, my final supplementary is for the Minister. I want to ask the Minister, Mr. Speaker, when can we expect some action on long-term care wait times, and when will we have a report from the committee that should have reported back numerous days ago?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and pleased to get the record straight on this. If the member opposite will go back and take a look at what we said, is that within the first 100 days, we would put into action a refresh of the continuing care strategy. There was no report. You're only in office 100 days. And I think the former Minister of Health will recognize and realize what you do in 100 days. But we did put it in action. This spring, we will be getting not only a report and a refresh of the continuing care strategy, which will really be focused on care in the home, but there will also be a dementia strategy. We are well underway to fulfilling what we said in the first 100 days is to put those processes into action.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Health. Last week, the Premier and the Minister fast-tracked through their DHA merger plans, then patted themselves on the back for following through on only part of their campaign promise. But in the spring of 2014, as part of the taxpayer-funded public opinion research exercise, the Liberals felt the need to gauge how Nova Scotians felt about the merger. That's why they spent a grand total of $34,540 of taxpayers' dollars on 15 online focus groups on their DHA amalgamation plans. That's a lot of money to see what people think of something that you already promised anyway. And I will table that information. So my question to the Minister is, if the Minister is so certain about his merger plan, why did he use taxpayer dollars for these costly focus groups? And was he getting cold feet about the campaign promise? Or does he regularly waste taxpayers' dollars for no good reason?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I thank the member opposite for the question. And there's no question that this minister knows exactly what the plan is as we restructure health care in Nova Scotia. We will start to see in the next few months, in fact, those final details around the structure, what it will cost. In terms of going out and doing a survey, it wasn't about confirmation of what we were doing. It was simply to have their voice about the whole process of going through this over the next number of months, how they could be engaged in this. It's hard to go across Nova Scotia and get to every community, although I did get to 20 or 30 during the process of the tour.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Apparently, the 15 focus groups weren't enough for the Premier and the Minister. Also in the spring of 2014, as a part of another taxpayer-funded $5,725 in opinion research, the Liberals decided to poll their merger plans, asking Nova Scotians what they knew about the Liberal Health Authority plans and what they felt the primary benefits and top negative impacts would be. At a time when the Minister of Health is preaching the need for savings in the healthcare system, how can he justify his government's wasting taxpayer dollars on senseless opinion research while there are still patients waiting for service?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think it's awfully important to gauge the opinion of Nova Scotia and to get a sense of how they feel about the amalgamation. This is a huge change. This is a huge change here in our province, and it's important that they know and understand what is going on. And if they don't have all of those answers, that's the job of the minister in my department to give them the direction that we are going.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. It's obvious that the Minister of Health has an affinity for expensive taxpayer-funded opinion research. Focus groups appear to be particularly favourite of the Minister. In June 2014, taxpayers were milked for about $15,000 for a series of focus groups focused on employee engagement for the Health Department. I think I tabled that one already, but I think I got another sheet there. Altogether, the surveys that I mentioned today add up to $55,265. How many frontline patients did that money serve directly?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe it's important to get the opinion and to hear from Nova Scotians on this issue. And if we can help guide them into the new structure, I think it is a good investment for our government and for the people of Nova Scotia. And it will be money recaptured in time because we will get it right.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question for you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, in the Law Amendments Committee last week, we heard from a variety of health care workers who said they were thinking of leaving both their profession and our province because of this government's approach to health care bargaining. Mr. Speaker, we heard from RNs and LPNs who have been considering another career, not only because of Bill 1, but also because of Bill 37 and Bill 30. And Bill 1 certainly gave them another reason to be concerned. So my question to the Premier is this. Why is this government so intent on picking fights with healthcare workers when these fights are causing healthcare workers to consider either a career change or a move to another province?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I do not at all agree with the premise of that question.
Yeah. The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
I guess people were just making it up, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Diane Wilson is an RN. She said Bill 37 caused her serious concern and made her question her career options. However, Bill 1 for Diane was, in her words, the final nail in the coffin. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier is this. What does the Premier have to say to Diane Wilson and healthcare workers like her who expected this government to respect them and their hard-earned rights?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, first of all, I want to thank Diane for her tremendous contribution to ensuring that the healthcare system in this province has been there for Nova Scotians. I want to reassure her that any of the hard-earned rights that she has fought for and earned over the period of time will not be changing, regardless, Mr. Speaker. No matter how many times her union leadership or the NDP say it is, it's just not factual. It will not change. They've earned those rights. They will stay in place, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, like all Nova Scotians, we want to ensure that the health care system is in communities across this province, just like every health care worker does. Why, Mr. Speaker? We've been so encouraged by the health care workers who have supported the essential service legislation and reshaping, Mr. Speaker, our health care delivery model.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on our final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, I don't know if Pinocchio is in the house or if I smell somebody's pants on
order,
fire.
Order, please. I'll remind the Honourable Member that the reference to Pinocchio and the government is unparliamentary. I'll ask you to retract that. The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much. I retract the Pinocchio statement, Mr. Speaker, but I do believe I smell burning pants, Mr. Speaker.
Order, Mr. Speaker, please. Order. We're going from bad to worse here. I'll ask the Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party to retract that phrase as well.
Certainly retract that. I wish I hadn't smelled anything, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my final question to the Premier is this. Would he please explain to Diane, who has invested considerably in her education and her profession of choice in nursing, why he's driving her out of the nursing profession in our province, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Premier.
First of all, Mr. Speaker, I think the two phrases the leader had to retract perhaps are potentially titles to her book when it gets launched, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want to say to Diane and to all healthcare workers, it is no way the intention of this government to drive any healthcare worker out of this province. As a matter of fact, every step that we have taken has been to ensure that the healthcare system that they so dearly love and appreciate and want to serve in is sustainable in the long run. It is there in communities across this province. The pieces of legislation that we've introduced has ensured that the collective bargaining process can happen at the same time we're providing services to Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. And the last changes we made were to ensure, quite frankly, that the collective bargaining process could happen without constantly keeping this province in negotiations.
The Honourable Member for Northside, Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Transportation. Mr. Speaker, last week the Minister of Transportation confirmed that the Torquay-Maclean ferry in Englishtown is in fact 5 weeks behind schedule and $280,000 over the tender price of $776,000. Mr. Speaker, that's a 36% increase over the original budget. So my question to the Minister is, what unexpected repairs are causing the ferry to be 36% over its original budget?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With respect to the Torquay-Maclean, every 4 years, Transport Canada requires that we put our vessels in the dry dock to check them out, to make sure that everything is okay and to make sure that they're operating safely, obviously. With the Torquay-Maclean, it's actually the tender that was awarded for about $775,000 went to AECON of Pictou, which is a tremendous company that the Premier and I visited a couple years ago. It's a fantastic operation, and I know that the members for Pictou certainly support that company and the jobs that it brings to our province and to their region. You know, for this process, the way it works, there's a specific amount of jobs that are required for this tender, and then there's leeway built in. When we take a vessel out of dry dock, Mr. Speaker, these vessels operate 365 days a year for the most part. When we put them in dry dock, we do every single thing that we possibly can to maintain their long-term safety, that they're ready, particularly for the winter. So it's like an inspection. When we get it up on the hoist, we check every single moving part to make sure that it's safe for Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. This is what a responsible government does. This is what our department does. We have experts in the field that know that these vessels are safe before they go in the water. That's a commitment we made to Nova Scotians, and we'll make sure our ferries are safe. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we're not saying the government's not responsible, but the project is over $1 million in repairs for a boat that's only 6 years old. And that vessel only cost $4 million to begin with, Mr. Speaker. And if that's not bad enough, according to a Freedom of Information request, there are over $138,000 in repairs done on the ferry so far this year, including two cable changes. We all want to see the boats safe for passengers, but the government must also be accountable to taxpayers. So my question to the minister is, what's causing these unexpected repairs, and how can Nova Scotians be assured that they won't be on the hook for hundreds of thousands of dollars more?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Mr. Speaker, the reality is we can take the politics out of this, and it's very simple. This is our busiest ferry in Nova Scotia. We have 9 ferries, 7 in current operation, 2 spares. These vessels are, the Torkel McLean is our busiest vessel. It carries 500,000 passengers per year. When it's damaged, when it needs repair, we repair it. We don't set a timeline for communications reasons. We fix the vessel when it's ready to go back in the water, because in the water. Mr. Speaker, the reality is we have tough questions about ferries. We spend about $9 million operating them. We only take in about $1 million per year in revenue. So the reality is it's a big investment for Nova Scotians, so we want to make sure that they're safe and maintained. With respect to the Englishtown crossing, there is some talk in the community about, do we need the ferry, do we want the ferry, or should we put a bridge there? So when the member gets up for his final supplementary, I'd like to know where he stands and the people he's talking to in the community. Would they prefer the ferry service, or would they like a bridge? Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount on his final supplementary.
That's not a question I've been asked, Mr. Speaker, but I will ask when I get requests from now on if that's the case. And, Mr. Speaker, it is one of the busiest ferries in the province, but it's also taken out of service at the busiest time of year. And it was replaced with a smaller ferry. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister is, what is he doing to get projects like this under control and make sure that our taxpayers are protected from this in the future?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Mr. Speaker, the reason why I pose that question to the member is that these are the questions that we're asked as a government every day. We've got to make good, strong financial decisions on behalf of the province. But we also have to ensure that these vessels are safe. That's our paramount. That's number one for this government and for the people of Nova Scotia. So for us, we allow our experts to give us advice when the equipment is damaged, when the machines need work. We tender them out. It's an added bonus when a fantastic Nova Scotia company gets that work, like AECON, and we're going to fix those vessels. When we can get them back in service, they will be, but not until those vessels are safe. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Minister of Environment. Many residents in my community have legitimate concerns about the possibility that the Sackville landfill will be reopened to allow significant increases to the amount of leachate that is processed on site. The former landfill was shut down in 1996. At the time, the community was told that it would never open again by way of an HRM motion, which said, "Council is not and will not consider any extension of the Highway 101 landfill, including but not limited to extensions of time, size, or expansion onto adjacent lands in the future," Mr. Speaker. So I'd like to ask the Minister, when can the Minister tell the House that if HRM approves the process at the former landfill site, does it require the Department of Environment's approval?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you for the question. The key thing on this particular file, I understand the issues and the concerns being raised by people in that community. In fact, a number of my colleagues on this side of the House raised that issue and the concerns of their residents and their constituents earlier as well. And I can tell the member opposite, Mr. Speaker, that as I explained to my colleagues, that there has been no application to the province, to my department, Department of Environment, for any changes to the industrial approval at this point in time.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I recognize there hasn't been any request. I believe he may have indicated that they do need approval. I know I went to the public meeting a couple weeks ago, Mr. Speaker, and I asked the HRM staff that very same question, and they did respond in indicating that the provincial government, the Department of Environment, would have to prove any changes if the municipality decided to go in that route, Mr. Speaker. After those meetings, I wrote an open letter to the minister asking him to look into the issue, and the minister called it premature for him to get involved at that point. Well, Mr. Speaker, it's not premature for our communities, for the one I represent, for the communities that his colleagues represent. So I'd like to ask the minister, why won't the minister listen to the community by stopping the expansion of the leachate plant now?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you again for the question. I guess to clarify why I think it's premature is because as a regulatory body, the way that the Nova Scotia environment operates is that we operate on applications that come into our department, and we get many, many applications on issues that are of concern to constituents and people across this province, Mr. Speaker, and we take them very seriously. To start engaging and injecting ourselves into issues and possibilities, as the member opposite indicated, he said, when will you take a position on if this application or if the municipality makes a decision and wants to proceed? Well, Mr. Speaker, we're here as a government to operate and make decisions on facts and actual activities that are taking place in the province of Nova Scotia, not on hypotheticals. I'm busy enough, as the members in PICTA would know, working on issues and concerns that are actually affecting people today, not to be spending my time on hypotheticals. Thank you.
The honourable member for Sackville-Cobequid on his final supplementary.
So what I heard from the minister was it was a total waste of time to worry about comments and concerns from community members that live in my riding and that live in the riding of everybody who is represented by the landfill. That's sad to see from a minister, Mr. Speaker. The municipality is serious about this. They've been having public meetings about this. They're talking about it now. I don't understand why the minister wouldn't say, if we're totally against this, and the premise of expansion to the landfill, why wouldn't we just put a stop to it now? The municipal government is wasting taxpayers' money by going through this process. I think the minister owes it to his members and the community what is their stance on the expansion of this landfill. I think it's not premature, Mr. Speaker, and I hope the minister recognizes that. So I want to ask the minister, why hasn't the minister already put the community at ease by telling HRM that their landfill expansion is not something that they would entertain?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Mr. Speaker, thank you again for the question. I'd like to first, before responding, Mr. Speaker, clarify that in no way, shape, or form did I suggest that listening to the concerns of the community members in the members of riding or anywhere in the province of Nova Scotia is a waste of time, Mr. Speaker. What I indicated was that it was premature for this department to be spending our time staking out positions. What I think the people of Nova Scotia expect and appreciate of this government, and particularly in a regulatory body like Nova Scotia Environment, is that we take our time, we follow the rules, the policies, and the process to make informed, educated decisions based upon information that comes forward. So the process is to receive an application, review that application, make an informed decision at that point in time. So, Mr. Speaker, I stand by the statements made that it is premature. Before an application even gets presented to us, it is very possible that the municipality of HRM will, in fact, make a decision and never actually forward an application for an amendment. So why would we want to spend government resources stepping into an initiative that hasn't even come forward to the department, Mr. Speaker? Mr. Speaker, I have to wonder why they want to spend our time on that, interfering politically on a process in a regulatory body which is required to make informed, evidence-based decisions, not jump in before necessary with political interference. Thank you, sir.
The Honourable Member for Colchester, Musquodoboit Valley.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Minister of Municipal Affairs. Great Village has experienced a lot of flooding in the last couple of weeks, and there has been extensive damage to homes, to the gas station there, as well as to the fire department, as well as new bridge development that is taking place. The damage is extensive, and I'm wondering if the minister has had a chance to go and see for himself the damage that was done to that community.
The Honourable Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question. No, I'll share with my colleague that I have not attended the community, but would be more than welcome to join him at a time that's convenient to him.
The Honourable Member for Colchester, Musquodoboit Valley, on his first supplementary.
So just to pick up on that, is the Minister prepared then to engage with the people of Great Village to find out what can be done in the future to protect them from the flooding?
The Honourable Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I should share with my colleague that my colleague on this side of the House, the Minister of Education, who is responsible for that riding, has spent extensive time visiting homeowners, engaging myself in discussions, and engaging the department in discussions in a response to the circumstances that that community has experienced.
The Honourable Member for Colchester, Musquodoboit Valley, on his final supplementary.
Just to follow up on that question, I know a lot of infrastructure is being trying to be introduced into the Colchester area because of the flooding there. Great Village has not been put on the list yet. Do you think that that would be a community that should be on the list now for flooding?
The Honourable Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank my colleague for the question. Those circumstances of flooding in Great Village, the department has expended resources to the community. Transportation department has been out to do assessments on damage to infrastructure. The EMO department has been out and has done assessment on loss to homeowners. And we're in a process of completing that evaluation to determine what, if any, support that the government can provide to this community.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal. Mr. Speaker, in early July, I received information regarding the dilapidated condition of the rail line running through the downtown business core of New Glasgow. I recently attended a meeting with the Town Council in New Glasgow, along with a representative from the Railways Company Office in Montreal and two representatives from the Minister of Transportation's office. Mr. Speaker, at this meeting, the Deputy Minister of Transportation said on October the 15th an inspection would be undertaken of the rail line in a drive-along truck. My question for the Minister, does the Minister intend to participate in this inspection trip?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for the question. This is a very important topic for our government. Obviously, the tragedy of Lac Mégantic changed a lot of things for a lot of people as it relates to rail. With our current, the Hopewell line with which the member refers, there are three inspections, levels of inspections. The company does one weekly. Transport Canada does one on the province's behalf a number of times per year, the most recent one being in August, which was found to be in compliance. And there's also an annual inspection that's done independently and paid for by the operator, the current operator, Genesee Wyoming. For us, this became an issue of public confidence, Mr. Speaker. Given that tragedy, given some of the other derailments, certainly the one that has taken place on our lines, we wanted to do more. So there was a number of issues and comments and complaints stemming from the town of New Glasgow and the town of Port Hawkesbury. So I thought it incumbent on our government to check into those. I didn't send two representatives, Mr. Speaker. I sent my two top people with respect to rail, our rail expert Steve Newson and our Deputy Minister Paul LaFleche. I've got a lot of confidence in both individuals. Steve has been around a long time. He knows a lot about the rail system. He'll be a great member to have along with the ride-along on October 15th. I wasn't scheduled to go in that meeting, Mr. Speaker. To be perfectly frank, I wouldn't know what I was looking at. I'm not an expert in rail, so I rely on the people around me that know these things. I'm going to take every indication from my staff, from the town of New Glasgow, from that member, and if there's anything we can do to improve safety, it'll be a done deal. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, rail ties in large sections have decayed along the line in New Glasgow to the point they can no longer anchor spikes. The damage is serious. Brackets that should be anchored with four spikes have fewer than four, and the majority have as few as two or one. Most of the brackets are not even flush with the rail bed. Many sections of railhead have extended lengths on the outer edge, which have splintered and, in some cases, simply broken off. Common sense would say that this would have to affect the integrity of the rail line. My question to the Minister. Will the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal insist that the personnel participating in the upcoming inspection on October the 15th get out of the vehicle and actually walk sections of the track in order to recognize the decaying and unsafe rail lines?
Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What I've directed our staff to do is exactly what I mentioned in my first remark. We want to have every stone unturned here, Mr. Speaker. If there's an issue, if the member has issues with respect to safety, with regulations, with compliance, I would like to know them. If there's a spike that isn't in a proper place, I would like to know that. If there's a rail bed that has an issue, if there's a problem with a rail, if there's a problem with a railroad tie, I would like to know that. What I'm dealing with now is three levels of compliance that I get reports on. our experts tell us we're in compliance, that things are safe and as they should be. If there's any information out there that will help me make decisions and further strengthen and increase safety for the people of New Glasgow and for all Nova Scotians, then I'm certainly willing to do that, Mr. Speaker. I'm looking for every piece of information I can find and make things better and safer for the people we represent. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I have been discussing this issue with the Minister, and in his department has information and photos of this particular section of track in the downtown core of New Glasgow. And Mr. Speaker, it's remarkable the amount of attention this section of track has received in the downtown core of New Glasgow since I brought it to the attention of several groups. Practically every day there's machines and employees on that section of track. Mr. Speaker, I spoke with the recently retired president of Genesis Wyoming Incorporated, owners of the Cape Breton Central Nova Scotia Railway, in a phone call from the Montreal office. In the conversation, he disagreed with me that cars carrying propane and butane actually travel through the downtown core of New Glasgow. The state of disrepair of this rail line, according to someone with extensive experience in the field, told me this section of track is the number one ingredient for a disaster. All the red flags for a potential accident are present, and the majority of the town's buildings, offices, and restaurants are only a few meters away. My question to the Minister, will the Minister assure the residents of New Glasgow that immediate attention and proper maintenance of this section of track will occur?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Mr. Speaker, every piece of information that we can gather will be used. I know that the member has said many times that there's information out there. He just referenced it from a source that he didn't identify. Mr. Speaker, if there's any information from a rail expert that we have that says that the rail is not only not in compliance, but it's not safe for Nova Scotians, then I think it's incumbent upon the member, that person who's the expert, and anyone who has information about the safety of the rail line. We have three levels of inspection. According to Transport Canada, according to the guidelines set out by that department, it is in compliance. Again, for me, when we heard information and complaints from the town of New Glasgow, from the town of Port Hawkesbury, about concerns that they had from Councillor Joe Janega, from Mayor Billy Joe McLean, we checked those out. We're checking each and every facet of the complaints. We want to know what's happening on the ground, Mr. Speaker. Again, I will say to that member opposite, if there's an expert out there, if there's anyone who has information suggesting that line is not safe, that the Hopewell line needs repairs, and it's there and it's present and it's in front of us, I really, truly request that they get that information to me directly. We will take immediate action. Thank you very much.
Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, yesterday, Dr. Chris Milburn, an emergency room doctor from Cape Breton, told reporters that the lack of nursing home beds was continuing to add to long wait lists in the emergency room. Dr. Milburn said it's a domino effect. The nursing home affects the hospital affects us. He went on to say that the wait times in the ER have grown by 20% during weekdays and 30% on the weekend. The increase has been measured over the last year. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister is, what immediate action will the Minister take to ensure seniors are taken care of and to relieve pressure on our emergency rooms?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. It was a good point raised by the doctor in Cape Breton. It does create that ripple effect. We know that there are certain areas of the province that do have a higher demand at present on our nursing homes. The big movement now is to provide home care for more Nova Scotians, and to that end, we've invested $12 million in this year's budget, bringing it up a considerable amount over the past number of years. And however, the reality is, 34 Nova Scotians turn 65 every day. We have tremendous demands for nursing home and home care.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, last week my colleague pointed out that the number of seniors on the wait list for long-term care has reached 2,531 across the province. Of that number, more than 600 of those families are from Cape Breton. There are 70 hospital beds in Cape Breton alone that are being used by someone on the wait list for long-term care. Mr. Speaker, that's 70 families with a young loved one sitting in a hospital bed waiting for nursing home. So my question to the minister, will the minister finally reveal his plans for the next phase of the continuing care strategy?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Well, I thank the member for the question. We are just months away now from making that refresh of the continuing care strategy known to Nova Scotians. We know that we will go further with providing home care to take pressure off the system.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I'm getting a family from Westmount area whose loved one has been in hospital for over 26 weeks and wants to go home, but the home care is not available for him. The wait list is too long. Mr. Speaker, the Chronicle Herald reported a year ago the average wait time for a long-term care bed is 396 days in Cape Breton. That figure gives little comfort to anyone in Cape Breton seeking care in hospital or a nursing home. Mr. Speaker, we heard today that the government said that they lowered the wait list by over 100 in the past few months. My question to the minister is, will he tell families when he will provide relief and those loved ones waiting for a nursing home?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I know this issue very, very well. In the Annapolis Valley, we have the same kind of demand on the system. As I started out earlier today and addressing one of the questions, there are a couple of pockets that do need much more, support for nursing home availability. We will be looking at reducing the amount of time that that people are in a nursing home by providing even more home care so that those who are in the greatest need for a nursing home, and especially that number that are in beds in our hospitals in Cape Breton and around the province, can move a little quicker and smoother into the nursing home.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Minister of Justice. Mr. Speaker, last week, journalist Hilary Bowman wrote a story in The Coast that chronicles years of alleged harassment and cyberbullying suffered by two women in Halifax. And much of this harassment occurred or originated online. And I will table that, Mr. Speaker. After pleading with police and being referred to the provincial cyber scan unit, one woman was eventually told that her case was being closed because it was an international case and there just wasn't anything else the cyber scan unit could do. So through you, Mr. Speaker, is the position of this government that all international cases such as this one simply be closed?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the member opposite. We noticed that article, and our office takes these very seriously, and in fact, we have been in contact with the director. And I'm pleased to advise you that we've also contacted the police officers involved, and as the member opposite probably knows, there's been the deputy of the police has been on the radio and issued various statements to that effect. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister opposite for her response. Mr. Speaker, the Coast story highlights issues about the lack of real knowledge and education by many law enforcement officials when it comes to cyber harassment. The cyber scan unit has been up and running for about a year now, and I have to say that they've been doing a wonderful job helping many women and men who come to them for help, including me, Mr. Speaker. But the cyber scan unit has limits to what they can do, and I'm really sorry that it took this type of media attention for the minister to review the process. Because many questions have been coming forward from people to say that there's just a limit to what the cyber scan unit can do. So my question through you, Mr. Speaker, is what did the minister know about this particular case prior to it appearing in the media, and what steps did she take to actually address the situation?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Very much, Mr. Speaker. Indeed, it's a very important question, and it's a question that's been raised by many, many people across Nova Scotia. And I can tell the member opposite that I had no information whatsoever about it prior to appearing in the Coast. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And again, I thank the Minister for her very honest answer, because I understand that sometimes we don't hear everything that's going on, and sometimes it does take the media to draw our attention to these very important issues. So, Mr. Speaker, I've done a lot of work myself personally, helping young women in my riding deal with a porn site that was an international porn site that highlighted underaged young women from our area. And they were very frustrated because they couldn't get their pictures down off this site. We contacted police, we contacted RCMP, and I even contacted Minister Peter McKay from the federal government. But it seemed that nobody was able to do anything. Finally, Mr. Speaker, we were able to bring the site down through the work of many other individuals who are not with government. But, Mr. Speaker, Roger Merrick, the Director of Public Safety for the Nova Scotia CyberScan Unit, has clearly stated that there is a real need for police to learn more about cyber harassment and criminal action over the Internet. So my question, Mr. Speaker, through you is, what actions will the Minister take from now on to ensure that police across Nova Scotia receive adequate education about the CyberScan Unit and training on cyber harassment and cyber crimes?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Indeed, it is a very, very important question. It's one that I take very seriously as a mother of four and a grandmother of one now, and in fact, I have a teenager at home as well. It's very much an issue that we all need to work on, every single member in this House, every politician, media, education, our school system, everybody. I can tell the member opposite that I've actually had discussions, and I've been speaking with our own Minister of Community Services, who's also the Minister in charge of the status of women, as well as Minister of Education. We are taking it very seriously. Not only that, I can tell you from the justice perspective, we're having meetings with police officers, with RCMP. They are all on board. They all view this as very serious, and they're doing everything they can not only to educate their own police forces, but also the public and everyone else. And I, just from what I read in the papers about this issue and what the police department had issued, I was very, very pleased with those responses. And in fact, they are very much available for anybody who has any issues on that and would very much love to take any and all concerns from every single person in this province, because it's indeed an issue that we all have to look at.
Order,
thank
please.
You.
The time allotted for oral questions by members to ministers has expired. We'll now move on to government business. The Honourable Government House Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Would you please call government bills for second reading?
We'll now do government bills for second reading.
Speaker, would you please call Bill number 14, the Gas Distribution Act?
We'll now call Bill number 14, the Gas Distribution Act. The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that Bill number 14, an Act to amend Chapter 4 of the Acts of 1997, the Gas Distribution Act, be now read a second time. Mr. Speaker, the changes we are introducing to the Gas Distribution Act will clarify market regulations for the delivery of compressed natural gas, or CNG, in Nova Scotia. Clarifying market regulations for delivery helps CNG providers and